This is going to sound kind of silly.
Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Tucker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Bielabella Lost Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Evening, everybody.
Tanya Gates and Red Powell.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Man, I thought you'd be a little more excited to hear about, like, Attila and Rough Riders going up for pre-order.
I'm pretty excited about that. No, I thought... So I found out recently from a couple of brand new listeners that they were kind of caught off guard from having known me to hearing my introduction. And so I decided to change up my pace and saying hello a little bit. I'm sorry. That was entirely intentional. But I'm super excited for Rough Riders. Even though I love the Rough Riders in concept, I really love the way that they've delivered the model. But I will be customizing and making my own Rough Riders, probably using motorcycles from the Jackals.
Me too. I'm exactly the same. And I'm going to wait for you to do it and show me how to do it first.
It's going to be so easy. I can't wait to show you.
Some beautiful things about the hobby. You know, we got to kit bash and stuff all we want. Cadian upgrades, right? Also coming out.
Yeah.
Snap.
So that Cadian Castellan model looks really cool. That's the one that caught me. That's actually the model that I was looking at. And like, you know what? I could probably have a Cadian guy in my Catastrophe Force.
I mean, absolutely. The whole book tells you that it is all good in this hood and all the guard play together.
But the books.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, but see, old habits die hard. I'm with you, Red.
Sure.
I mean, I ain't going to do it.
for me it's when I was making Gaunt's Ghost, like, I like Gaunt's Ghost specifically, that regiment. However, there are plenty of cases in the actual lore and stories where there are other regiments that are tied in, and so now this offers this opportunity without making it extremely difficult to have that kind of aspect added in, which I think is cool for other players. Like, I mean, I agree that's not necessarily the direction I'm going to go, but I do think that it is very interesting. They don't limit players in that regard, so it could be pretty exciting to how some things could mix and match in like that.
Well, we'll see how people do the creativity bound to grip some people. Although I will say, like, some of the kill team and like the Castrican and stuff went for up for pre-order last week, and they went quick.
Oh, I hope that my store can get them. I don't order from the website. I order from my friendly local game store, but now we're kind of at the whim of what GW wants to actually send us. So I'm crossing my fingers. I'm crossing my toes. I just want like one kit. Not being greedy. I just want one.
It's always the fear in Australia as well. Not that I'm in Australia right now, but it's always the fear when I am there you'll get serious FOMO. You'll be like, especially like bespoke box sets. I was really afraid that I wasn't going to get one of the Black Templar box sets. Turns out that was the most prolific box that I've seen in recent years. Still got them on shelves in Australia, but many others, like, it was really hard to get an Indominus box in Australia for a while. Like, really hard.
You need one or two or three. I've got a few.
And that's the thing, right? I know some people who had six of them, and I couldn't get one.
Is that still the only place you can get that particular lieutenant?
Yes, the one with the storm shield and the weird visor thing, or is that the captain?
I can't remember.
The lieutenant has the Volkite pistol and the storm shield.
The varying, I'm pretty sure if you look at the varying starter kits that they did for Indominus, not just the Indominus box, but like there's like an elite or like a beginner box or whatever. I'm pretty sure he shows back up in those.
Gotcha.
They really need to, like, next April Fools, just wait. They didn't do that, did they? They release a G-Dub, if you're listening. 1st of April's coming up. We release a Regiment of Renown, Army of Renown, just lieutenants.
Lieutenants.
Just all the lieutenants. As many as you can take. An entire 2,000-point army of lieutenants. And what do you get for it? Nothing. You don't get any bonuses.
Even, they don't even get like OBSEC or anything like that.
Sure, why not?
Sprinkle some OBSEC.
Sprinkle some OBSEC on them.
They still only count as one, though.
That's right. Let them benefit from each other's auras, not their own. So all lieutenants must support must come in pairs in order to reroll ones to wound. It's just getting better and better. And maybe make it so they could, like, have mastercraft a weapon or something. I don't know.
I think a couple of them have that.
But they all have to take the same weapon, right? They all have to take the same weapon?
Possibly. Or completely different. This one has a mastercrafted Oculus bolt pistol.
They all have to be different. They all
This one has a Oculus mastercrafted bolt pistol. This one has a heavy mastercrafted bolt carbine. This one has a... Yeah.
Now you're talking. I kind of want to play this now.
I think it's fantastic. I mean, it's what Tau players wish the 8 was, right?
That's funny. It's pretty cool. They've always been cool. I don't know if I've ever seen one on the table.
I have. It's pretty cool.
Primaris Lieutenant.
No, the 8.
The 8, man.
I don't know, just, come on. I'm playing.
Sure.
Speaking of which, you mentioned you're not in Australia anymore. Well, not anymore, but not currently, Adam.
Yeah. Post-LVO, I've been on a merry journey jumping here, there, and everywhere. I've been to... I was trying to remember what she says on Home Alone, when she says she's been to Paris, to Dallas, to whatever. I went up to Vancouver straight after LVO, and then from Vancouver I went to Toronto, and while I was in Toronto... So while I was in Vancouver, I actually recorded a game with Play on Tabletop, which was phenomenal. And then I went to Toronto, traveled down to Welland, and recorded a bunch of games with Mini Wargaming, which is... So those are two things I've always wanted to do, and managed to get them both ticked off. So if you do partake in any of those products and watch any of those shows, enjoy, hopefully, maybe, right. Fingers crossed.
Listen, I do want to hear about that. I want to tell people on this episode, we also have a vendor spotlight from Geek Grind Coffee. I talked to the one of the founders and what they do and how steeped they are. See what I did there?
Yeah.
In the nerd
quality.
Culture.
Quality.
Please don't. So,
looking forward to that coming up on the show. And then we're going to do our normal kind of rundown of stuff. And I have an interesting hobby segment. The hobby segment where I'm painting things that have nothing to do with miniatures at all and how those things relate to each other. Stay tuned.
I am on the edge of my seat now. I want to know more.
All that prefacing and foreshadowing coming up. But you got to get to the end of the episode. Sure, all that.
I see how it is. Okay.
Adam's got to get Gallimand around while the rest of us are stuck in our primary locations.
Yeah, I've ended up back in, you know, that place that I pretended I didn't like a couple of months back. And luckily enough, maybe the locals don't know I'm here yet, but I'm back in New Orleans, which is legitimately one of my favorite places on this earth.
You got to get the tubes.
I've been once. I will be going back again. Are you finally been?
Okay, good.
I'm going to Anton's tomorrow night, which is, I think, one of the longest eating establishments in North America. So I'll be headed there tomorrow night. It's going to be fan-freaking-tastic. I've also got a bunch of others. I think it's... Is it Dookie Mace?
What?
Yeah, Dookie Mace. Yeah, it's also another long-standing establishment here. She, lovely founder of that restaurant, was big in providing and facilitating the civil rights movement. It's also just a phenomenal place. Phenomenal eatery. What do you call it when something's like pivotal to culture? This is definitely going to get left in the show.
Culture? What are you talking about?
You know what I mean? Like, it's a fixture. Like, it's a... Whatever. Just cut all that. There's a word. There's a word. There's a particular word I was looking for, and by Lord, I did not find it. Institution.
There we go.
It's a cultural institution, apparently, and I'm going to go check it out.
No, nice. I would like a full report. That sounds cool.
I will give you a full... As soon as I landed, went straight to the first seafood place I got, smashed half a dozen oysters and a big bowl of gumbo. Nothing better.
Nice. I want to hear about the travels again, as we'll talk a little bit as the show goes on. I want to tell people that the tickets for the U.S. Open Series events are live now. You can get them. There's also stuff like Warhammer Fest, but all the events coming up in the U.S. And then, of course, the finale for the competition side is also running alongside the Grand Narrative event and other events there. So I think we talk about them a lot from just the perspective of them being tournaments like 40K or Age of Sigmar tournaments, but there are lots of other things, including the narrative event, kill team, painting classes, all kind of stuff. Check out the... I'll put a link in there, but we've got Tampa this year, Tacoma, which we went to last year, Kansas City, and then all, you know, again, the finale in Atlanta. It will be spectacular. Everyone, whoever went, had a good time. It will be no different for you. You should check it out. If you're at all able to do it, completely worth it. And it's not just tournaments. Plenty of things to get tickets for.
Apparently, the painting classes are like world class as well. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right. The folks that do them, Kat and Kate and Dan sometimes, are some of the best painters in this game. And they bring
it. Worth it. Seems yeah. worth it to me. Didn't at the narrative the grand finale, didn't they like it was expensive, but like you got to paint a Titan?
Yeah. No. So they did like a masterclass workshop for Warhound Titans. And so what was really cool is that, and I've really appreciated them all being really good sports because they spent 3 days, 4 days getting all that stuff together. And then they brought them out. They were, I would argue, I mean, maybe not. Maybe they weren't at the rate that I said, but they looked amazing. And so like, I'm going to sit here and say they looked like they were 60, 70, 80% done for the most part. And they had done, there was amazing shading and you could tell like the airbrush artwork was perfect. The whether it was stenciling or whatever to get these designs they had, it was just such a good job. And so it was really awesome to see how they were able to pull this off. And then they brought him out on the table and we had this huge, massive, like apocalypse level battle at the end that had, I want to say it had 14 Warhound Titans on the table. And that was really awesome to see. And you could tell they were excited to get back to continuing to paint after their Warhounds were destroyed. They had fun putting them on the table and everything, but they were really excited to keep going because they were just doing such an amazing job.
I think the next one coming up is Kansas City. That will be June, the 1st of June. And there is a hobby master class for Demon Princes, blending class.
Ooh.
Yep. The hobby challenge where you can, it's a paint. You basically get to build miniatures and then paint them there. I think you pick who's like the best one. Painting vehicles and walkers, painting expressive faces is one of the classes.
Is it to be followed up by painting subdued faces?
Yeah.
Is there a part two where
neutral faces?
Neutral faces. only passport photos.
Speed painting, non-metallic metals, basing, painting freehand. Yeah, and these are taught by people that are experienced in teaching and coming up with ways to keep you engaged, and you will be better after these classes. And they're nice people. So fun to hang out with.
Yeah, it seemed like I went through there a couple times just seeing how they were, like how the progress was and everything for the classes. And it seemed like everybody was having a really awesome time.
And Kansas City's at the backdrop of a team tournament. So if you don't, want to come and hang and play in the 40K side with the team, then do some of the hobby classes. You can spend your whole day there hanging out. There are some cool places around Kansas City. Although I will say I was kind of shocked by how early things closed in Kansas City. But there were still cool places to go. And of course, some tacos to be had. But
even in Kansas City, good tacos.
Even in Kansas City, there was a Guy Fieri restaurant.
Way.
Yeah, right next to the stadium.
Flavortown, right there.
Flavortown.
There was also, I forget the name of the place. It might be just called like Just Tacos or something like that. But it was in a street they called Brewer's Alley.
Oh, yeah.
So great, like,
great little venue area.
Yeah, 10 or 20 breweries all within a couple blocks of each other.
Yeah.
Oh, that's dangerous for me. Craft brewing. Oof.
Oh, yeah.
And good eats.
Yeah. That actually sounds like a good time to me. So you guys can go to like the tournament and whatnot. You just leave me here and pick me up when you're done.
Yeah, have fun with your expressive face. Gotta get over here with.
I'm gonna get down with this double ale over here.
I do like how they've broken these hobby classes down. Like with there's painting and blending. There's painting vehicles and walkers. You know, painting a vehicle is different than painting a regular troop. I say it can be different.
So I know we're not really on like the hobby segment or whatever, but like I've painted a lot of guard tanks. And normally I don't do too much on them. I just like base coat, wash, layer highlight, edge highlight, done. That's like basically how I do my tanks. But I have this old metal Bjorn the Fell Hand dreadnought. It is so cute. I got it secondhand and I was like, you know what? Bjorn deserves to like for me to actually try. So I've been like lovingly wet blending like each armor panel on him, and he's turning out good. It's really interesting to see like how far I've come as a painter since starting my Guard Army in 2019. So I'm just going to take this moment to give myself like a little pat on the back and say, good job, Tanya.
It looks amazing. Is it up on your Instagram yet?
No, I posted it to my stories, but I haven't posted it in my feed yet. I'm going to wait till he's like completely done before I post it.
Oh, those work in progress pictures look so good though.
He's just blue with like a little bit of red on him right now. So I feel like maybe once I do a few more like pieces of flair, then maybe I'll work
in progress. Not enough flair, huh?
Not enough flair on him yet. He's a space wolf. Needs more flair.
Look at Bobby. Look at how much flair he's got.
I'm so glad you got the reference.
I think it's hard grained into us. So.
Yeah.
The people of a certain age.
Yep. Yeah. So anyway, talking about the team tournaments, of course, but I want to emphasize there are all kind of other things to do. So if you're in the area or just want to come hang out and be around a lot of Warhammer over the course of the weekend with a lot of other people that are there to have fun with Warhammer, you would not be disappointed. Thanks for indulging me on that. And I'll be there.
That's reason enough to go, really.
I mean, largely just talking about Warhammer, you know, but it's no different than than most times hanging out. See, where am I going to play this year? I'm going to play at the ATC.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What, do you only get one? So you have to decide which one?
Got to be really precise. Yeah. It's tough. Well, so, no, I love going to all the events, by the way. I wouldn't have it any other way. But, like, going out and playing in a tournament when you're normally, like, talking about it, yeah, that's what kind of gets harder to do.
Sure.
But, you know, got to bring some glory for the Glick Gaming Club in some one way or another.
Not being like the voice of Warhammer for Games Workshop, that's not enough glory for your gaming club.
Look, it's all about the ITC score. You just gotta, where do you rank in the club?
Filthy meta chasers.
Thankfully, they're very nice and understand that other stuff. Anyway.
And so when you talk about the game club, you're talking about the Wrong Way Kids?
That's it, yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, group. You know, it's gonna be cool to see a lot of folks you don't see every time or ever, especially coming out of different stages of where we're at with travel wise and that kind of stuff. So we're looking forward to that this year.
You guys gonna try and make a run for like top ITC? Do you guys like make goals for that?
No. The idea with clubs, or at least with our club, is to just, well, one is an excuse to get together, but just try. Just like get points on the board, represent, wear some of the merch that we have. We got a lot of merch as far as like t-shirts and hoodies and little, you know, movement things. Red, you still have your little movement device?
I sure do. Yeah. Little ruler thing. I mean, it's nice is that I have, I think, two others. And so like, it's always helpful when I'm trying to deep strike things in and I can set them all up. So that I can see where my like models are 9 inches away from wherever the rest of the enemy formation is. And so it's definitely one of those that travel along with me. Always appreciate those kinds of things.
Got your going to be deep striking an 8-bound?
Mostly Angron now that he resurrects and does that. But I'm still more of a fan of mass Zerker hordes right now, personally. So but
see, let's talk about the World Eaters for a minute again. I know it's, you know.
Yeah, why not? It's way better than another army that's painted in red, but whatever.
No.
Dagger. Right to the heart. I mean, but with.
My Primarch's on the table. sorry. Okay, keep going. My bad.
Man. With Angron, and I think that there are people, and a lot of players, especially ones we're talking about efficiency and competitiveness, that don't like to invest in those larger models because they can be removed. It's a very lethal game.
Sure. Like,
the way the game's designed, you can't really hide them. Everyone's going to get shots on them. There's enough shots out there in the world to kill these big things.
Yeah.
Does it change the math with Angron because you can bring him back?
As long as you have the math to bring him back, right? So that goes back to like 8-bound are cool, but they're also a lot of points for fewer models and units. And it's not like they give more blood type points, but I can bring more MSU type models or units of Zerkers that every time you kill 5 of them, you know, that's a unit and they're easier. They're arguably easier to kill than 8-bound. And so you want to be able to blunder other people, but it's also assuming that your opponent has enough units. And so if it takes 6 blood tide points to bring back Angron, you know, you got to see where you're actually bringing in those 6. It can't just be, you know, 3 units of exalted 8-bound wiping up a unit or turn, or even just a unit a turn per unit of Exalted Apebound. That's still only 3 blood type points right there. So it's just a matter of timing and how you go about it. And I think that the Horde approach definitely takes more advantage of that, in my opinion.
Have y'all done any analysis on that? Like, what is the way to ensure that you get your 6 blood type points by round 3?
I think part of that goes with a blend, and I have not brought in Jackals yet, but I think Chaos Spawn are a good example because they're a unit and they're a monster and they're only 25 points, so they're exceptionally efficient. And man, like, that's, you know, you gotta, I'm just gonna throw them at you, right? I'm gonna throw my spawn at you, and you have to kind of deal with them amidst everything else, but they're just a trap to feed me more blood tide points.
I played against Jackals now, and they're great.
Yeah.
They are legitimately great. Phenomenal models, good rules, punch up so effectively.
In what way? Like, what's, because we've done just the very service level kind of discussion and analysis, like, on them before.
You think about what a cultist does in combat, which is, you know, one half of nothing. And then a jackal does a whole bunch of lots. So it's like a literal, like, multitude of 10 by how much more of a return a jackal in combat will give you to a cultist. It's actually kind of absurd how much you get for the points difference.
Is that because of what they can, I mean, do they, I guess they're going to make it there because people are probably going to be less incentivized to shoot at them because they're dealing with your Great Bound and your Lord Invocatus.
And if they do, you know, so be it. That's another BTP on the board for relatively cheap.
So I like the spawn. I'm trying to figure out ways to keep funneling Angron.
Right. And so I agree, like, Jackals, because they're going to either, as you know, Adam stated, they're going to get their punches in. So if you don't stop the Jackals, and honestly, you go in to kill the Jackals, you might actually not want to kill them. But they, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, I think they die pretty easily, right?
They, just like any other cultist.
Yeah. Apparently.
Some of them are not even wearing shirts.
Yeah.
That's right. No shirt saves. So it's, I think that it's got some great mechanics to really taking advantage of that with the point cost and everything. It's funny. There's efficiencies in dying. They've built it in and taking advantage of that. The spawn, I mean, 25 points a model, right? Like, that's so easy. It's pretty crazy.
I like the spawn idea. I mean, I'm always a fan of spawn. I think they're typically undervalued by the factions that can take them.
Hellbrutes are another one. We talked about Hellbrutes a little bit last time, and the fact that, you know, they're also 2 blood tithe points if they die, and you're going to want to kill the Hellbrutes because of what they can do for another player. So it's they just good damage output, resilient. They'll hang in there and make it difficult for you. And so you want to take them off, and then you realize that by doing that, you've just given the other player, the Khorne player, 2 blood tide points doing that.
So I guess you can maybe hope that Angron gets there, kills one unit, Angron gets killed, and that's, what is that? How many blood tide points is Angron? He is?
He will be 3. No, sorry, 2, because he's not Titanic. At least I don't think he is.
He's not.
Yeah, so that's 2.
He's a monster character.
Yeah, so that's 1 for being a monster character or vehicle.
Oh, it's monster or character. Okay.
Yeah. And then 1 for a unit, so that's 2. And he's probably going to kill something. So, like, he'll generate some in him for himself doing that. And then you kill him, and then by turn 3, you should be, if they've killed other stuff, you should be well within 6 to bring him in.
So they can listen to that. All guaranteed to get a recycle.
Yeah. 100% of the time, it works 100% of the time.
Did he recycle on you? Did he come back? He's like, surprise.
He did.
How'd that go?
So, not to spoil the battle report, but I did kill Angron. He did come back, and it was on the bottom of turn 5, and the previously he had spent the BTPs for +1 to charge, and he made his 8-inch charge. So it could not have been cooler for him. Yeah, a distinction there.
Was that the smart move, though? You go ahead and get in the +1 to charge and seemingly waiting a turn to bring back Angron?
So, well, he wasn't dead then. He was still alive, and he was trucking through my lines. And then, I was playing Necrons, and I took a monolith. Do you want to know how many wounds Angron did to a monolith? Let's take some punts. Let's see who gets closest.
37.
Yep. Just throw out a number, Tanya, in red.
88.
Oh, that'd be perfect. Tanya?
I guess, should I do, like, the prices right and do, like, one less?
$1, Bob.
Yeah. I'll say 40. 40 is a nice round number.
So you are the closest, Tanya. 62. Ooh, did 62 wounds. And legitimately would have almost killed three monoliths because they're 22 each. So he literally was six short of killing three monoliths. Turns out it's a bit of an overkill monster, which is interesting. It's an interesting price point. Like you're paying for so much melee oomph. And the fact of the matter is there's very few units that you need as much as he's got into. He literally, like, there is just a fine mist left of even the most durable things in the game.
So the biggest mistake that you could do when fighting against Angron is to castle up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you spread that stuff out. You can only base one thing.
100%. The dude will kill as many things as he can get within an inch of with the charge move. If that's four things, the dude's going to kill four things. It's ridiculous.
I like that.
I mean, if there's anything you could hope for Angron, that'd pretty much be it, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, when his D&D, character sheet is pretty self-explanatory.
All attacks. Well, what I was going for with that comment, though, was it the right thing to do to just spend those blood tide points because you knew he was going to die and you were four less to, towards the total of bringing him back whenever he did die?
Well, so he was very calculated with it because he was already up to, I think he was already at six when I killed Angron. And he was at six when he spent the five. So he went down to two. And then all he needs to do is pick up one more, and then Angron dies and comes back automatically. I think that was his thinking at the time. But he had an overabundance. I wanted to make sure that he got something for the points, and yeah, he got a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think it's gonna be part of the play and the fun is figuring out your ratio unit and what you feed to your opponents to get those points and when to spend them, because every one of those things on the chart is good.
Oh, exactly. They're all gas, as we would say.
But I just like the idea of getting at least two recycles with the Angron.
Well, if I like, there is some little cheeky interplay where if I know you're saving them to bring Angron back, well, I just get Angron down to like five wounds and then stop and just try and play keep away, because then you just have all these blood tide points you're not spending. So it's actually a weird juxtaposition there, like when you get into like the blood tide points mini game, so to speak. Like, do you spend them early just in case Angron doesn't die, or they don't target him? Or do you save him on the off chance, he does go down, you do need to bring him back? So it is a fun little thinking
but there's,
exercise.
I think, and that's a good thing, that you're bringing up this kind of little mini game mechanism. But I also think that there's enough of other small stuff that I just kind of plink that in the meantime. Like, okay, I've hit seven. Like, I would just go ahead and pay for the one that's a single blood tide point, or I pulled off two more people than I expected to have died or whatever, and just keep going from there, if that makes sense. Just I've got the six, but I'm going to go ahead and start burning my excess, arguable excess blood tide points.
Fun math.
It's like an oxymoron.
Fun math.
Fun math.
With blood tide points, though.
Yeah.
Counting with anyone.
Yeah, okay. Counting in blood and skulls is okay. That's pretty fun. I'll give you that.
He just looks so good on the table, too. I know I shouldn't be saying that.
Too late. You already did.
Oh, no, trust me. I'm not feeling the pull to chaos. Not that flavor of chaos, anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say. You are. You just don't know it.
Let's take a quick break. We'll have that vendor spotlight segment. Then we'll come back with us in about 10 or 12 minutes or so. See y'all then.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a very special vendor spotlight segment here on FTN. My name is Paul, of course, but I'm joined by Patrick Meyer.
Hey, how are you?
Hey man, welcome to the show. This may be the first time folks have heard of you, but they probably have heard of your brand, Geek Grind Coffee.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, some people are starting to hear about it. We have a fair bit of online activity, and we've been out here for a couple years now since COVID led us kind of back into our game. But yeah, people are starting to hear about the brand and really appreciating, I think, what we're offering.
I encountered y'all at Gen Con a few years ago.
Yeah, that's right. That was really our first public coming out party, so to speak, my background is I'm actually from sort of the toy industry, entertainment space, and moved away from corporate America for all the right reasons years ago. And as it turns out, never really expected to be in the coffee space or tea space as we are today. But my wife is Colombian, and her family's been in the coffee industry and business in the mountains of Colombia for many years. And we spent a lot of time down there. Over the years, I learned a lot about the farms there, the coffee farms, the production, the process, and became interested to start a little project. And per your comment about Gen Con, I guess it goes back about three Gen Cons, three or four now. We've brought in some of our first Geek Grind product. We're based out of Chicago, drove down to Indianapolis and attended Gen Con with Dragon's Roast, Dark Roast Coffee, Wizard's Mist, Dwarven Dawn, Elven Enlightenment, a few of our first offerings, and had a really good show. Since then, it was a project that's turned into a small family business, and that's what we're doing today.
I want to talk about both aspects of this, the geek and the grind.
You bet.
Let's actually start with the grind, though, because we're talking about coffees and teas, like you mentioned, and, you know, also combined with some things that are very near and dear to my heart. And if people want to go check out the site, it is geekgrindcoffee.com. You'll got some cool like properties on there. You got Princess Bride.
Yeah, that's right. Princess Bride. That's a real fun one. Labyrinth. We work with Jim Henson of Muppet and Labyrinth and Dark Crystal fame family, and kind of reach back and try to find some fun pop culture things that we love, old things that you know, spark our passion and our interest. Princess Bride movie is one that we love a lot, the Labyrinth space. We work with the Pathfinder team from Paizo, the tabletop company, and even Heavy Metal Magazine. I don't know if you remember Heavy Metal Magazine. They're actually back, from the 70s and 80s of, you know, comic fame. Did some cool Heavy Metal magazine in the comic space. And even lately, Frank Frazetta. Some people may know Frank as sort of the godfather of fantasy artwork, original Conan drawings, the guy with the axe on the horse, Death Dealer painting from 70s and 80s. And
almost iconic. Like it's almost like a really memory that just stuff. Resurfaces, you know.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So, you know, again, we have our own lines like, Witch's Brew. And of course, as I mentioned before, our things like Dragon's Roast and Elder's Fathom is like a take on Cthulhu, and many flavors now. I mean, we started out with a few, whole bean coffee offerings, and now we have whole bean and ground coffee, many sizes. Recently got into K-Cups, almost 40 different K-Cup offerings, and now many, many flavors. What we love is, you know, we work with family, all the coffee. We don't source our coffee. It all comes from our own family, friends, and predominantly women-owned coffee farms because that's where we find the need, you know, in our mountains, which is kind of our second home in Colombia when we spend time there. But we like to say, you know, it's fantastic coffee. We know it because we grow it. So, you know, we know exactly where the coffee comes from. And to us, that's special. And when we get it to our customers, we like the fact that we're delivering a high quality, transparent, authentic, product. So
what do you think is like one of the like signature characteristics of the coffee that y'all source?
Well, definitely Colombian coffee tends to be kind of the perfect cup of coffee, I think, at least for the American palate. So the coffees that we have coming out of our farms tend to be sweet, not bitter, very drinkable. And they do really well across dark coffees all the way into the light profiles. So for us, we like to offer a real balanced cup of coffee that's very drinkable, and it takes flavors very well. I mean, we have salted caramel and vanilla and mocha and, so many fun things. During the holidays, we have Yule Fuel and many, many, many flavors. So for us, we're offering a super premium coffee. As far as, you know, if you get into the geeky, you know, cupping scores of, sort of the coffee snobbery world, which is not really our space, but I mean, we're cognizant of it and we play in that space. So very high scoring coffee, but at a very moderate price. And it's because it's direct from our farms. We want to deliver that value and we have fun doing it.
My, behavior with coffee changed a little bit when the pandemic started. I started steeping my old cold brew. I ordered a big cold brew pitcher, put the grounds in, steep it overnight, you know, and then enjoy cold brew out of it for the next couple of days. Does this stand up pretty well to that type of treatment?
Absolutely. You know, and we've got, we're big cold brew fans as well. So we created a blend from two different farms because there was a particular, what we thought would be a perfect cold brew. We call that Frost Giant, and that's our cold brew product in either ground coffee or whole bean. And we make a lot of cold brew. In fact, even though we have Frost Giant, which is our kind of dedicated cold brew, we make cold brew out of all of it, from the flavored coffees to the light and dark roast. They all do really well. They all create a unique blend and flavor profile. But Frost Giant is kind of our go-to.
I'm digging it. And now can we talk a little bit about the geek side of it? Like, we talked about some of the stuff that's on there, but what is your, like, what drew you to that? Is that something that's important to you and special to you? And you know, you mentioned small family business.
Yeah.
How does it run through your family?
Yeah, thanks. So it's kind of interesting. I got into my first tabletoping experience really as something, you know, my brother was a year older than me. We were, you know, I remember the snowy winters in rural northern Illinois, and my father was in the toy business, and he was a sales rep for some different companies. And believe it or not, he connected with the TSR, which of course turned into Dungeons and Dragons many years ago, because we were near their headquarters. They were in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. So my father brought home players' manuals and monster manuals and players' guides and early modules from, you know, that D&D space. And then we opened up these, you know, books. And, you know, for us, it was an amazing thing. When I say for us, me and my brother, right? And from then, we were sort of hooked. Number of years later, you know, as I was an adult, I got into Warhammer, you know, wandered into my first Warhammer store, you know, getting a haircut, I think, for my kids. And we were just killing time, and they had a huge Space Marine, you know, outside. And we said, let's go check that out. And of course, you know, we walked out with more product, Warhammer product than we probably should have, like a lot of people.
It's plus a common story.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So we know it very well and started collecting more and more and built our armies. And I had a lot of fun and still do with that. And at the time when my kids were younger, it gave us something to do, and we painted together and all that kind of, you know, kind of great experience. So from very early on, you know, experiences with my dad, working through with my brother. And then, you know, we had a toy business, and we worked with a lot of, you know, major studios and small studios. So have a real appreciation for, you know, for the entire space. In fact, similar to Warhammer, if people know MechWarrior, you know, the original MechWarrior properties that came out, and Microsoft eventually acquired that. And we worked with those guys many years ago, making replicas and things like that. So when it came to coffee, I had an idea for the Geek Grind brand, and the vision today, it's not just things that would be at a Gen Con, not just tabletop and whatnot, though that's a huge part of our space. It's really anything that might be at a Comic-Con, you know. So for us, you know, we're interested in, you know, traditional fantasy all the way through anime, you know, various properties around the world. And we like to surround ourselves with the things that we're passionate about, and whether it's coffee or, you know, apparel or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, that makes us happy. That's what we like to surround ourselves with. So we started making a wide variety of things with Geek Grind, and it turns out other people liked what we made. So I guess a long way of saying, we don't try to make things that we think people will like. We tend to try to make things that we love. And we found a strong following of people who appreciate that.
I like it. And on the site, people can either, you know, get a bag of something specific, or they can kind of build like sample boxes and that kind of stuff, so they can try several things.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's been really exciting for us and a lot of our longtime supporters too, because in the past, really just 4 months, we launched something called Build-A-Box. And you can do something that, as far as I know, I'm pretty busy, so I don't know everything about the coffee industry. But I think we're the only ones in the coffee industry doing it exclusively, which is, even with K-cups, you know, individual single serve K-cups you put in your Keurig, you can buy a 12 pack, a 25 pack, up to 300 bulk K-cups from us, and pick individual K-cups. You want one Witch's Brew and one Dragon's Roast and one Labyrinth, you know, you can choose them, and we go pick and pack them and send them out to you. So that's the case with sample sizes for coffees, with our teas, with the K-cups, as I mentioned, ground coffees, all the way across to 5-pound bags and larger products. So we try to have a lot of ways that people can buy. We have subscriptions, auto ship. We have gifting clubs where you can, you know, gift yourself 3, 6, or 12 months of coffee, tea, or do that as a gift for someone else. And I'll say one of the most popular new offerings is we have two amazing hot chocolates. So we waited a long time to bring out hot chocolate, but we got one double hot chocolate. And we also have a Mexican style spicy cinnamony hot chocolate. And they're both fantastic. So kind of something for the whole family, because, again, we're making stuff that we like and that we like to have around the house too.
That sounds pretty good. Yeah, especially the I like the couple different versions of hot chocolates. It is still quite chilly in certain areas of the country right now.
Yeah, that's right. And well, when we first started to hand out the hot chocolate, you know, we asked the family, you know, what do you think of this? They just took one look, their eyes opened up, and they turned around and walked away with it. So that was a pretty good impression of, they said, you know, this is mine. But yeah, you know, we've got, you know, and going forward, we've got some exciting things coming up for some new properties and new flavors. We're always sort of in the coffee lab coming up with fun new things. You know, the other thing that is a unique offering from a company like Geek Grind is our coffee crates and tea crates. We have some products where we have, you know, a beautiful kind of gift box, looks like an old crate, and inside two bags of coffee or tea or K-cups and mugs. And we've even started to do some very limited offerings with Funko Pop figures from properties like House of Dragons and Labyrinth and other things. So for us, it is about the taste in the cup, but we also love unboxing experiences and really everything that comes along with, you know, the genre.
Well, also, I want to invite folks to check out your website. And I think you also maybe have a discount code for people checking it out for their first time.
You bet. You bet. Absolutely. We welcome everybody to come, you know, take a look. We've got, you know, fantastic sampling all the way through, you know, full boxes of things. Everything's 100% guaranteed. We ship fresh. We ship fast. When we ship, it's somebody in the family packing it and shipping it. So we take a tremendous amount of care and appreciate everything that goes out the door, as does our family, you know, down in Columbia. 20% off. You can use discount code FORGE20. I guess, you know, easy to remember, right? FORGE20, and that'll be 20% off your first order. And we just hope people who are, if they're interested, give us a try, give us feedback, and just hope everybody loves it. And in the meantime, we'll just keep having fun, you know, making what we're making.
I mean, what's not to like here? You know, a little bit of coffee, a little bit of caffeine, yeah. a little bit of nostalgia.
That's right. That's right. And while it's not my daily, we even have decaf. So, you know.
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I hope folks check it out. I have also checked it out.
That's fantastic. Thanks, Paul. I really appreciate the time.
Have a good one.
Take care.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody, we are back. Thanks for listening to that segment there with Geek Grind. I don't know. I like coffee. I like geeks. Seems like a good fit to have on the show.
I also really enjoy coffee. You know, I don't have any vices in my life, but I would say probably Warhammer and coffee are my main two. So that's a really good combination for me.
Yeah, we'll come back with a full report on it. The hobby segment I was talking about. So I've taken on a home improvement project of painting a cabinet here at the house. And about, I don't know, a quarter way through the project, I'm like, man, I wish the paints, you know, worked the same way as the different miniatures.
Man, with a wash, this thing would look so much better.
That's like, oh, just slap this Agrax on these and just get on with the rest of my life. But briefly, you know, what it occurred to me, right? You know, then you're thinking, man, you know, is that a podcast topic? You know, probably not, but here we go anyway. But it's one of those, it's like, well, okay, the real fact of the matter is, especially as I continued pushing on and painting and then repainting when something didn't look exactly like I wanted it to, you know, you begin to realize that it actually, there's some concepts that are very much the same. But what I've done over the years with my miniature painting is that I've become a lot more aware of, like, this is going to sound kind of silly, but like listening to the product, and paying attention to what it needs to be successful. What I mean by that is, like, you know, what ratio of water or dilutant or whatever does it need to do what I need it to do? How many coats does this color that I really want really need to have on the model to get it to the brightness or whatever that I want? You know, we've just learned that over time with using these paints. And you get better at painting when you really recognize that's what's happening. Does that make any sense?
Yes. I don't know why this came to me, but, like, did you know that miniature paints are some of the most expensive paints on the market?
Well, I mean, if anything of what our hobby tells us.
Okay. The only reason why this sort of, like, it came to my mind is it's sort of along this sort of frame of thought. But so my husband had a friend who is an artist. So she went to art school, a big fancy artist, okay? And she was having a hard time with miniature painting, right? Because she was into just regular, like, 2D acrylic painting. That was her thing. And for some reason, she was just really unhappy with the results that she was getting on her miniatures. And so she decided that she was going to get, quote, expensive paint. And that really got me thinking. I was like, is there really any paint that's more expensive than miniature paint? Because, like, it's pretty expensive, right? And there are paints that are more expensive, but they're extremely rare, and they're usually, like, hand-milled and all of this. So, like, when you see artist-grade paint, it's not as expensive as hobby paint. Like, it's not as expensive as, like, the Citadel paint pots.
I did the math one time about if you got a gallon of, like, Abaddon Black, how much would it cost? It's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. And so it's just really interesting that, like, you know, this person thought that this more expensive, I'm going to put it in quotes, more expensive paint would work better for her on the models. And you can use that artist grade paint, but it's not made for what we're doing. And eventually she just decided that the hobby wasn't really for her. And I think, like, she went back to like 2D art, but, like, all of those products just work a little bit differently. Acrylic paint is not the same across brands and depending on what you use it for.
I do think there's a lot of science that goes into paint that we kind of take for granted at this point. Like, as a, for instance, like, house paint you stuff on the walls. Like, it is kind of designed to flatten out, you know, conceal your brush strokes, and there's other things involved with and stuff that we just kind of take it for granted. But it's designed to work on walls, not necessarily work on miniatures and vice versa. But, you know, it has certain characteristics you can get to know. And once you get to know those characteristics, the task becomes easier for you.
It's true. And at least with miniature painting, like, we can all tell you if you're beginning to thin your paint. But I don't think anybody has really captured what that looks like when you've achieved it, because I think it's different for everybody. You know what I mean? Like, how I thin my paint is going to be different than how any of you thin your paint. It's not going to look the same no matter who does it.
And also, depending on where you are and the humidity and other things like that, the ratio of how you thin your paint could change when you're, like, in Texas.
Even seasonally, if you're a place that has, like, big swings in seasons, how you thin your paint in the summer is going to be a lot different than what you do in the winter.
So over the course of this project, I've gotten to know how this particular paint works, and it's getting easier for me. And I thought, you know, it's not miniature painting, but, you know, you got to listen to the product, pay attention to the conditions, and then you struggle with it less.
Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people, I've had people, like, ask me in my, like, comments and direct messages, like, how do you know when you've thinned your paint enough? And it's just something that you just have to practice and you'll know when you hit it. And it's one of the most difficult things, I think, when starting your miniature painting journey is, like, learning how you like your paint thinned too. So if you're struggling with it, just know that more than likely all of us have had that struggle and just keep painting. Just keep trying. You will get it. It will click one day.
Identifying that that is the struggle, that may be the first step.
Yeah, I don't really hear that many people talking about it as a struggle, though, but I know for a fact that I have struggled, and in the summer, I still struggle with it.
Yeah, just looking at it with a little critical view of yourself is not thinking, oh, I'm just a bad painter. Like, you probably aren't as bad as you think, and there are things you could do that will help you get there, maybe further along, maybe make some of those tasks that get in the way of your painting as good as you want, like removing them from the table just with awareness of the products.
I know 100% in Australian summer, I airbrush in the mornings and only the mornings. That's it. Because, like, I've clogged that airbrush so hard so often because it just dries out so quickly. One little couple of molecules dry up, and then the whole thing's backed up and you get nothing done.
Then your whole painting time is cleaning your airbrush now.
Exactly right. You're supposed to have had this done by this time and you're moving on to this bit. Instead, you just spent 6 hours trying to get your airbrush to work.
Yeah, in the really dry heat of the summer here in the Canadian desert, it's kind of the same thing for me too. It's like paint in the morning or paint at night, or you're just like continuously going to be doing like one brush stroke and then cleaning your brush because it's already dried out on the end. And sometimes it's just better to like cut your losses in that moment and go read a codex or something.
Yeah,
but that's my hobby talk. Ease it, look at what's happening, try to figure it out, realize it could be you and your technique, but it also could be you're kind of fighting upstream with whatever the product's trying to get you to do or need you to do.
I'm always curious, and I don't know if anybody else has the experience to know, but you know how like we have problem colors to paint? I was wondering if like house painting or even like 2D art painting, I wondered if there's colors that were more difficult to work with in those mediums as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. In house painting and that kind of deal, the consistency of the paint, you talk about thinning your paints. I mean, the consistency of house paint, depending on how you're going about it and how you go about priming and things like that. I mean, I'm speaking from experience. I kind of grew up with house paint. My father actually owns a paint store. And so I'm a little familiar with that. And so being introduced to things like the color wheel and things like that, we've talked about that, colors that complement each other. And then when you're putting it in a room, and Paul, as I'm sure you're more than immediately aware, given what you're trying to do in the house, some of this, it's remarkable what a color on a wall can do to an entire room, just like certain colors on models can affect the entire model, how it brings it down or darkens it or it brightens it, and those kinds of things. And then some colors, you lose the depth or you can't see the texture, if that's the case, or what have you. And the finish, right? So like in the primer and how that goes about it between a gloss or an eggshell or a matte, that kind of finish to it and what that does to the colors thereafter. But the difficulty, of course, as I've discussed, and I'll throw it out there again because I feel I have to, in my hatred for the color yellow. as it comes to trying to spread something like that across a wall, it's got to be thick. It's got to, or you're doing multiple coats, and that's what it is. It's having to go back and put something like that over and over to get exactly to the color that you want. And so we, with our modeling and whatnot, are familiar with that in a different scale of how we build up those colors or we break them down using something else, and there are mediums or finishes that can be added in depending on what you're trying to do. And then, when you talk about 2D art, you really have to look at that and the positioning and the depth of what you're trying to achieve with the 2D art and how you're trying to convey something, because if you're trying to do something and then it gets picked up on a screen, it's helpful in certain cases because the screen's off, being backlit, you can actually see more definition. But then when you actually print it or you're looking at it in a different kind of format, you might actually lose a lot of the detail. And so you just have to be aware of how the colors build upon each other or how they affect one another or are visually represented. Same thing that we see a lot of times with our own models.
There's a lot of stuff to think about. About 10 years ago, I had this brilliant idea of, I don't know, it kind of felt like all the colors were changing more frequently, like the little shades of, let's just say red or blue or whatever, like they were different than they were before. And I thought, well, you know, you can get color matching paints like from the hardware store. You know, why don't we have something like that for miniature printing, like where you could send in a color swatch of whatever you're trying to replicate and a machine would spit it out. I thought it was going to be brilliant. I mean, I did. I actually made a call or two around. And at the time, I don't know if this has changed, but the surface tension to get a drop of paint off of, you know, whatever the nozzle would be into a little pot was too great. Like you couldn't fill little pots with whatever the machines were that were capable of doing this, performing this task.
Makes sense, right? Because when they make, like when the companies make their batches, it is like gigantic batches of paint.
Yeah, so you could have the perfect color, but you'd be staring at the little drip off the nozzle. So it never happened.
It's interesting because, like, I use an app to create, like, my sort of, I guess, overall color schemes. And it's really cool because when you pick a color, it'll give you, like, all of the different ways that you can get that color. So, like, there'll be, like, hex codes if you're going to put it on the internet or, you know, like, all the different ways that you could create that color or bring it into a paint store to get that color made. It's actually a really cool piece of technology, but yeah, none of that stuff transfers over into miniature painting, and that's kind of frustrating.
So the hobby segment here is, you know, just keep an eye out for, you know, how to improve yourself. Sometimes it means changing things up about how you use the stuff, and things are getting easier to use. So we'll say the as far as like accessing that side of the hobby is a lot easier than it used to be because the products are getting better, but it still, you know, helps to, you know, try to get better with them, and it will not happen instantly. You have to kind of actively work for it. Then can we switch gears for a second and talk about some of the travels, Adam, you're having?
Oh. Yeah.
You got to spend some time with someone very near and dear to me.
Me too. The lovely Val Heffelfinger. It was beautiful enough to have me stay at his house for a couple of days. Also stayed at a couple of nights at the Dustin Henshaw residence from Stud or Scrub, who's another great friend, amazing hospitality.
But Thursday show with us.
Yeah, I played 5 games of fantasy with over the couple of days I stayed there, and good Lord, was it a fun time.
Are you gonna have to bleep out his human name?
I didn't think about it. Yeah, I've just started calling him his human name because I was staying at his house and I felt like it was weird to call him his fake name in front of his wife and son.
Please, words of respect to you. We're just gonna bleep it out because it'll be really good now that Adam has to apologize again on the air.
Do you not think it would be weird to call him his pseudonym in front of his wife and son?
Oh,
they
no,
they know, like, the score.
Yeah. It would be,
they know who he wants to be.
But it would still be weird. But anyway, yeah, so I stayed in his lovely home in downtown Toronto, which is a really massive. It turns out Toronto is massive. I had no idea it was that big. And abutting quite a gorgeous lake, turns out, which was partially frozen. Went up the big spire in the middle of town and did some nice sightseeing. But played fantasy. Like, I played 1 game versus Steve at Mini Wargaming, and I played 5 games versus Simon. So I had not played a single game of fantasy since Fantasy died.
Did it all come rushing back to you?
Oh, it was literally like riding a bike, man. It's so much fun. It's got to be so hyped for the old world. Like, literally, it's like I just got the appetizer to the main meal that's hopefully coming. You know, please let it be soon.
That's cool. What factions did you play? You said 5 games. Were they all the same, or were you playing different stuff?
I played totally different stuff. I played Wood Elves on Mini Wargaming, which is my very first game ever with Wood Elves, so please be forgiving if you do watch that show. I still think I did an okay job. I played Chaos Dwarves, Warriors of Chaos, Chaos Dwarves, and Ogre Kingdoms mostly into Val playing his pretty tuned Empire army.
Well, he's been working on it for a while.
Yeah, he has. He's been working on it. He's got quite a few reps in with it now as well. He's got it working pretty efficiently.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, nice to see the 'cause I know he's been, that's all he talks about really. So I'm sure he was ready. Yeah.
It's like when I first joined the hobby, I used to like wonder why people stuck with old game systems. Like, why not just, you know, stick with what's current and, you know, ride all the waves and whatnot. And the older I get, the more I understand. It's like, oh, yeah, fair enough. You just found your... You found your flavor, and you're just going to stick with it. I can respect that.
Then how was the Stutter Snarling?
It was really good. I did not play day two. I really ran myself into the ground, traveling everywhere, doing everything. Yeah, and so day two, I just hung out with the guys and watched the games and did a little bit of judging. But it was really nice to play a couple of games. I took a Castellans of the Rift. Had been literally a list I've had in my battle scribe for over a year. I just kind of put it in there ages ago. I just figured maybe I'll just run it for this one. And because this is kind of my blow-off event to just kick back, have some fun, meet a bunch of new people, not take it too seriously. And it was really nice to just, you know, take a list with a bunch of really cool mechanics, not that powerful units, and just had three fun games.
Very cool. Where are you off to next?
So New Orleans for a week, and then I'm coming to Cherokee. Like Frontline Gaming Cherokee Open, I'm going to be there and I'm playing.
Ooh. What kind of list are you bringing?
Grey Knights. I was going to play Black Templars, but I couldn't get the models together that I wanted. Nobody, because I'm over here playing Burrowhammer. Last year, when I came over for like 5 months, I literally brought 5,000 points of Dark Angels with me. It is incredible what you can fit in one of those G-Dub cases, large carry cases. I got 5,000 points in there and I used them twice. And so I wasn't putting myself through that. I left it all at home. And so I'm at the whims of what I can scramble together. It turns out nobody has Sword Brethren. Nobody has Primaris guys en masse who have like power weapons, special weapons. Everyone has like a Thunderhammer Sergeant, a guy with a power sword. Nobody has the density that I require for that list. So I wasn't running that. So I just
Death Watch and just get, you know, everybody's random chapters.
Yeah, but most of those are still Firstborns. Like I could get the Firstborn stuff, but I wasn't gonna ask the TOs if I could use Firstborns as Primaris. I'm not
sure.
I ain't game for that conversation. So instead, yeah, I've got a fun Grey Knights list that I want to run, and it should be a good time.
All right. Well, keep us posted on all that kind of stuff. Cherokee's going to be a good time. I know people had a blast last year for that. I think that was their first one last year.
Yeah, and this one's grown by like 50%. There's like over, like 230 players going this year. Beautiful Smoky Mountains. I hear it's not an easy place to get to all the time. Like you can't just fly into it. But that it is an incredible location, fantastic venue. Apparently, they treat us real good.
I don't know what the airport closest to that is. It's about 3 hours north of me.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if you're just flying into Atlanta and jumping in the car is the best option.
Agreed.
Well, good luck. Break a leg. I don't know what what is the thing to say? You know, like in theater, you say break a leg, you don't say good luck.
Don't suck.
Yeah.
That's a classic Warhammer.
Roll sixes.
Yeah.
May the dice be ever in your favor. I don't know. We can make our own one up. That's a good one to chuck in the comments. It's about time we had a unified dumb saying.
Adapt or die.
Yeah, adapt or die. I like that one.
With your shielder on it.
It's a
300 reference there.
Beware the plasma gun.
Well, that's our show this week. Done what we normally do. Gotten all around it. I'm building some stuff. Looking forward to getting some stuff on the table. Let's talk about Hellbrutes.
Yeah. I'm actually looking at my Angron over here, man. I can't wait.
Chaos Spawn. How many Chaos Spawn are you running, Red?
I've got three in my list. I'm using the Tormented, they're the like possessed looking cultists right now. I haven't found, I may pick up some of those, you know, the brute demons from 30K.
Oh yeah.
I may use those, but right now I'm using the Tormented. I just got to make sure I have them on the appropriate. Chaos Spawn are on 50 millimeter bases. The Tormented come with 40 millimeters. So I just got to put them on slightly bigger bases.
They're on 50 now? I thought they were also on 40. They used to be on 40.
I looked it up. You know, it's one of those things. I don't know if it changed over time. I too thought that they were 40 millimeter. So I didn't think I was in a bad spot. But apparently I need to make an adjustment.
Oh, good luck with that as well.
Thanks. Yup.
All right, everybody. We will be back next week. We're going to be talking about getting ready for Adepticon and all the other stuff, big stuff happening in the first part of this year. Thinking about Warhammer Fest. I know we got that topic. I'm waiting to get the actual event format for my listener submitted question in email. So a bunch of stuff to look forward to. We'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.
don't know what they said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.